Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at ArmorAll.com. Armor All. Less work, more clean. Terms apply.
I'm so glad you're with us here on the Clark Howard Show, where our mission is to serve you with advice and information that empowers you to make better financial decisions in your life. So I recently talked about GM and some other car manufacturers selling your info to auto insurers. I've got an update for you on that. I also have to tell you about a way your home insurers are spying on you potentially every single day. Later in this episode, this is hard to believe, but some colleges now are costing over $100,000 a year. What are they thinking? We're going to talk about that too. So the GM thing, I wish we still had the Clarkrageous Moment sounder because I was so infuriated by General Motors spying on its drivers and then selling off the data to insurance companies, which only was discovered because people started having their auto insurance canceled or premiums raised because what GM was selling was going on insurance industry databases and had very poor disclosures. And as I predicted when I talked about it, I said, GM's going to stop doing it and GM's going to get sued for it. Bam, bam, both things have happened already. And what brainiac at GM thought it was a good idea to spy on their own customers and sell them down the river selling off the data? Come on. Well, now listen to this. And this is a big problem in the insurance industry. The insurance industry is really into invading your and my privacy now. So you're never going to believe what the Wall Street Journal reported. Homeowners insurers are using data now with an intention and already doing this to some people where they are spying on your home every single day of the year. They are doing AI-based scans of your home with, I'm guessing, satellite technology. And they're looking for a reason to can you or surcharge you as a homeowner insured. Okay, so listen to some of the things they're doing. They're using AI from above to decide things like your roof's not okay. And you either replace your roof or we're firing you. Now, what's interesting about this is we have had multiple questions in the last year from people who got fix your roof or get canceled notices. I didn't know that there was this technology where they were examining automatically everybody's house as often as every single day. The problem is state laws and insurance is regulated by the states. State laws have not caught up. That there should be a procedure, for example, when they say replace your roof, there's no appeal. You can't say, wait a minute, I don't have a 25-year-old roof. My roof is 4 years old. I just replaced it. I got proof. The insurer doesn't want to hear it. They just send you the thing, get a new roof or out. I mean, come on. Crazy stuff. All right, another one. This is obviously an invasion of privacy, but you can understand where the insurers are coming from. There are a lot of people who might have a dog that they haven't told the insurer about. And dogs, well, sometimes they bite. Sometimes they lead to a claim. So you got to tell your insurer because now they're going to know. Because if that dog's out in the yard, the insurer is going to know pretty much universally around the country. Maybe in the next year, they're going to know every single day what's going on at your house. You know, this thing of the home being our castle, wow. I'm looking at, this one's an aerial drone picture of a home. Oh, I forgot to mention, what do people have at a house that an insurer might freak out about? A trampoline. If you don't tell an insurer you have a trampoline for your kids to jump on in the yard and you haven't told them, they may tell you, get rid of the trampoline or we're getting rid of you. Or if you have a trampoline, maybe they require that you have those safety nets around it. If you don't have safety nets, you're out of here. So there's all kinds of things that they're going to look for. One of the things that was in the Wall Street Journal story is that some of the insurers, if they see a lot of junk in your yard, you know, a lot of that the yard is kind of disheveled, that they're going to decide that you're not taking care of your house and they'll get rid of you for that reason. So this obviously a very, very extreme invasion of your property. There are no laws I'm aware of anywhere that prevent them from using a drone or using, could even be surveyed by airplane, you know, by a single engine plane. Even in some places, balloon kind of technology is being used to fly, videoing of everywhere. One of the companies that's funded by the industry can now cover 99% of all homes in the United States. And so they use computer modeling to decide that you have things they don't like. And so where insurers may not want to renew, i.e. Florida, California, coastal Carolinas, southern Louisiana, South Texas, they can take these things and say, ha ha, we got them. We got a reason to not renew. We can get rid of this person because, oh, that tree looks like it's dangerous there. So we're not going to renew them.
I have a question. Devil's advocate, just thinking, not saying this is right, but like, isn't insurance fraud like a huge reason that costs go up for the rest of us?
So you just did a major talking point of the insurance industry for homeowners in the state of Florida.
Oh.
And yes, there was an enormous problem in Florida with fraud from roofers and home improvement contractors. There were laws specifically that made it difficult for the insurance industry to challenge whatever someone from the home improvement industries would say. The legislature did something about that recently. And yes, that did have, it was like a piling on impact beyond hurricanes and windstorms and all that. So yeah, there is a fraud issue. There's a fraud issue with car insurance going up. But it's mostly at the periphery of it. It's not the primary cause. But the insurance industry, what's happened with homeowners insurance that's so significant and is going to sound so trite what I'm going to say, they've gone from the insurance business to the risk management business, and they're very different. Insurance was always about pooling risk, that you take a wide population, you calculate what the risk is for the overall population. Now the insurance industry, because of the technology available, is becoming risk management down to the individual, in this case, house. And so they're saying, or area or zip code or whatever. Yeah, you know, we're not making good profits in zip whatever number. So we should really redline these homes in here, figure out why we're not going to insure them. So then they use this technology and they say, okay, we got that one. We got that one. We got that one. Okay, we found this. We can get rid of them there. So the whole idea of one for all for one with homeowners insurance is over. And the political culture and the courts have not caught up on this because the insurers no longer are interested in general risk and general coverage. They're interested in treating every single home address as its individual profit and loss business.
Okay. Craig in North Carolina says, I live in a house that is over 65 years old. I have a wire from the utility pole to my house for the POTS, plain old telephone service. We don't have a POTS phone and don't plan to get one. I also have no outlet to plug one into in the house. The POTS wire runs right over my parking area where my wife and I park our cars. The problem is that the little birdies like to perch up on that wire and do their little birdie business
and
right on our cars.
All the time.
Can I cut down the POTS wire so the birdies don't have a place to perch? Do you have any other suggestions?
So this is something that came up before, and there are so many posts about this and articles written as well that the biggest danger is you cut down what you think is a phone line and you make a direct connection with the power company, and then it's curtains. So generally, the way it works is the tallest wire on a pole coming in from the street is power, and then below it are various utilities. It can be the cable monster. It can be the monopoly local phone company, whatever.
You're not going to suggest somebody cut it down themselves.
People do it all the time.
That's crazy.
You got to know it. It's something.
I would call the power company and ask them to.
It's not a power company.
It doesn't matter. I know, but I'm saying the power company might be willing to do it so you don't cut their line.
The power company is not going to come cut that phone line because it's not there. So they only rented the space. So next time you have above ground power lines where you live?
Yeah.
Okay. So look at the power lines. You'll see the top ones are the power company. And then it moves down, and usually the phone company is next, and then next will be the cable monopoly, cable monster. So if he is sure, if Craig's certain that it's the phone line, people do this all the time.
I would call it an electrician at the very least.
An electrician? Well.
Just to look at it. Yes, Clark.
I think you're being a little too risk averse here.
Wow. Okay. I'm not going to get up on my roof and cut a line that could be electricity. I mean, that's crazy.
Well, I've never disagreed with you more. I've never heard of anybody saying, because there would be no oops, they'd be dead.
Right.
They cut the wrong one.
Right.
But I've never heard of that.
Never heard of it happening?
Never heard of that happening.
Well, let's hope it doesn't happen for the first time. It's so funny. You know, I never disagree with you on this stuff.
No, that's fine.
That sounds crazy.
Fine. No.
Okay.
Right. So
just
if
to
you,
save a
right.
buck, my
so
God.
So to make Krista happy, call an electrician first, have them confirm, and they can even cut it for you, the phone line, and get rid of that so you don't have the birds pooping everywhere all the time.
Marianne,
okay now?
Yeah, Marianne in Georgia says, what is the highest interest loan companies can charge?
Uh-oh.
My son had to take his puppy to the vet, and he had to spend the night to the tune of $2,300. The vet suggested getting a quick loan, and my son clicked on the first thing that came up, and I can send you a picture of the loan terms. APR 218.3984%. Finance charges of $7,730.80.
Unbelievable.
So for a loan of $2,300, he will have to repay over $10,000. Please advise your audience not to click on the first thing that comes up in Google. And is there anything we can do about it?
So this, I mean, we've talked recently about all the problems with Google searches, and the loan sharks are all over it. When you look for quick money, many times they are lenders that are avoiding state laws on interest caps by locating with a post office box on a Native American reservation, Indian reservation, and they get around what are known as usury statutes in a state. So hopefully, Marianne, the loan does not have what's known as prepayment penalties. They would force your son to pay $10,000 for a $2,300 loan. He's better off even going and taking a cash advance against a credit card. Or if you're in a position to lend your son money so he can pay off this loan right away, because it is almost certainly, it's a activity of hoodlums. Yeah,
it's predatory.
To charge 218% interest. It's the same rarefied air of the title loans that I hate so much, and the pawn loans and the cash advance loans, the payday loans. So this is one of those areas of amorality, if not immorality. And if you can help your son get out from under this and he pay you every week or every month, so much the better. But being able to get out of it, there's not an easy way.
Bree in California says, Clark, I've been a fan for many years, and I just want to let you know I'm still driving my 1988 Nissan pickup I bought new when I was 21 years old.
No, you're not.
It is still going.
No, you're not. 36 years?
It is still going at 430,000 miles.
Wait a minute. You're 57 driving a car you got, or a pickup truck, when you were 21. It has how many thousand miles?
430,000.
430,000 Oh my goodness, I can't believe Nissan hasn't put you in a commercial
yet. Seriously, they should.
Wow.
Okay, and while I'd sure like to have a new vehicle, every time I look, I'm turned off by the cost and decide to drive my truck for, quote, just another year. I learned to do as much maintenance as I can on my own, and I've saved a lot of money over the years because of that. It shows that regular maintenance and good care can go a long way in making your vehicle last. Today, YouTube is a great resource for folks learning to do things like maintenance items like air filters, fluid changes, and brakes. I appreciate you.
I appreciate you too, Ray. So Ray, I got to tell you a funny thing. When I was 22, it's almost the same age as when you got this Nissan. I decided I wanted to know how to do basic auto mechanic stuff on my car. So I went to a one-year auto mechanics course. And at the end of a year, I was capable of doing basically nothing. There are some of us who could watch YouTube videos all day and never be able to be anything but a hazard to ourselves and our wallets. Then there are people like you who can just watch a video on YouTube and know how to do things. More power to you. I'm very impressed. I think that's so fantastic that you've been driving that Nissan for, my goodness, you're coming up on two generations driving that Nissan. Incredible. It might have even been called a Datsun when you got it that long ago. Who knows? Coming up ahead, we're going to talk about how much college costs, and I could do way in the Wayback Machine, how little it used to cost. It's out of control, and I know why.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch, subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
We got a problem, Houston. Cost of colleges. I mean, imagine the aliens coming down to Earth now. They'd be like, what? What? You go to some beautiful country club kind of looking place, and you go to these things called classrooms, and you spend that much money to get a degree. How much? Well, New York Times says now Vanderbilt has topped $100,000 a year for total expenses for this fall's freshman class, $100,000. And they're not alone. A lot of these schools cost that much. And at Vanderbilt, you know, a lot of people get financial aid and all that. Roughly 2,000 students are actually going to pay over $100,000 to attend for a year. Average private college now, including all the stuff, somewhere around $55,000. State school average about $25,000. This is bonkers, bonkers, bonkers. And how does this happen? How did we end up with college costs escalating so much? You know, I think about something I've shared with you before, that I went to a private college, and when my dad lost his job and I became a night student, I didn't change schools. I stayed there because the tuition was such that I could work full time at a job I could get as a teenager and earn enough to pay my college tuition. Today, there's no chance, unless I was a hip-hop star or a sports star or was engaged in some kind of illegal activity, there's no way a college student could earn enough to pay the cost of college at a private or pretty much a public college. And the problem to me is clear as what you would learn if you stayed awake in a freshman economics class at one of those colleges. The problem is the lack of market discipline because of unlimited student loan availability. I mean, we got all these arguments going on about president wanting to forgive these loans and forgive those, and how many votes is that going to get him in November and all that stuff. I mean, really, the problem goes back to the base, the source. Why are we as taxpayers funding these college campuses with an unlimited amount of money with no controls on it at all. I can go borrow as much money as I want to go to college. So let's think about it. So you do that. What do you do to a college? You make it like a monopoly power company. Oh, well, we ran up extra expenses, so we're just going to charge more money. And people in that state have no choice. They're just going to pay it. College campuses have become that because no matter what it costs, net of whatever mumbo jumbo they do with aid packages, all the rest can just be borrowed, and there's no incentive, none, in the marketplace for a college to control costs. This is the problem. We thought as a society we were doing a good thing by making it possible for people to borrow to go to college without recognizing what the economic consequences are in the marketplace when you do that. Because if colleges were having to figure out how to make a go of it without this huge, huge fuel of student loan money coming into the system, they would run different kinds of operations. You know, I know going around with my kids to tour colleges, both state colleges and private, the tours are a riot because you go around and they're showing you the workout facilities, which are fancier at many of these campuses than any expensive private club you could join in the most expensive white-collar cities in America. And having these fancy recreation centers and pools, tennis facilities. Some of them have golf courses now. I mean, come on. There's this amenities war with the dorms and all that. This is just crazy. So if I was coming out now and my dad was unemployed, and when I came up single income household, what would I do today? What I do today is I would be in community college, or I'd be in a commuter school or something like that and have something much more affordable. I know that it's really cool and all to have the greatest fitness center in the history of the universe at your college, but somebody's paying for that. And guess who it ultimately is? It's you and the taxpayers. So if we want to get these college costs under control, we have to heavily curtail, in fact, eliminate most federal subsidized student loans, period. Now, if you don't like anything I just said, remember on Friday, we have Clark Stinks. And you can do your post on Clark Stinks and let me know where I'm missing part of the bigger picture. But why do you think so many American families are turning against college? Because they're trying to figure out where's the benefit of all this cost. And it's a good question, because I was seeing in this article that the Times did about Vanderbilt that people who get a liberal arts degree, oh my goodness, the income they can earn is a tiny fraction of what the 4 years would cost at over $400,000. I mean, if somebody gets an engineering degree, they're going to be okay. They get computer science, they're going to be okay. But you get liberal arts, it's a crazy, crazy math puzzle. It's not very good.
All right, we'll go to some questions.
What do you think of that? The parent of a soon-to-be college senior and a soon-to-be college freshman.
I'm glad that my daughter's going to be a senior next year. That's all I have to say about that. John in Michigan says, last year I had the joy of marrying an amazing woman. She's frugal like me and was thrilled to simply elope together. Unfortunately, she graduated with a substantial amount of student loan debt.
Oh, same theme here.
Right. When we met, she could afford minimum payments of $550 a month, but now we have enough free cash flow to make additional payments on the highest interest loans, a few of which are at 7% simple interest. We're paying over the monthly amount on the highest interest loans to chip away at the principal. Much to my dismay, the statements show these additional payments are mostly going toward the interest balance. From scouring the lender's site, internet forums, and talking with their representatives, I keep getting the same answer, which is we pay off fees and interest before applying payments to the principal balance. My wife's friends who have loans serviced through this company have had similar experiences.
So it would be true with most any private lender, because here's what happens. So with a federally subsidized student loan, the taxpayers pick up the interest on the loans. So when you finish school and you start paying on loans, you don't have a big backlog of interest that has to be paid before you can service the principal on the loan. Unfortunately, with private loans, what happens is no payments with many of them are required while you're in school, in fact, or if there are, they're minimal. Then you get out of school and you have all this accumulated interest. And so the payments you're making are bad, ugly for years and years to come because you're servicing almost exclusively pre-existing collected interest rather than paying towards principal. Once you get to the point where, because it's a simple interest loan, once you get to the point that you paid off the backlog of accrued interest, then, and there's actually a benefit to doing this, by the way, because otherwise you're paying interest on interest, you will start having big impact on the balance of those private student loans, where it will really start chipping away at principal. So you are having impact. It doesn't feel it, but you are. But it's another example of how the massive web of student loan debt is just like a noose around people's financial futures. It's just such a hideous societal and individual problem.
Matt in Illinois says, I opened a Bright Start 529 plan for my daughter. I want to know if she, the beneficiary, makes contributions to her account. Can she get the tax advantage? In Illinois, I get about 5% back on my state tax return. She plans on making around $9,000 this summer.
Good for her.
She gets her federal tax money back, but she does not on her state tax return. If she puts money into the 529, is she eligible for the same benefit?
Maybe, and that varies by state. If a dependent can receive the state tax deduction that comes with a 529 plan. So this would be, I assume you're in the Illinois plan.
Yeah, that's what I said.
This would be a call required to the plan itself to find out if a dependent is eligible for the tax deduction. Now, what would be required, even if she is, as I understand the way this works in states that have the tax deduction, is she would have to establish a second 529 plan, not the one that you have, that she would be the owner of and designate herself as the beneficiary of, do the contributions to it, and be able to take the Illinois state tax deduction for contributing to a 529 account. And the alternative, Matt, is she can, if she's going to make $9,000, she can put $7,000 into a Roth IRA. Roth IRA will not have the Illinois state tax deduction, but it would be a fantastic way for her to start seeding her future, either for college expenses or if not needed for college, to let the money starting as a teenager to grow tax-free for years and years and years to build a big pile of money for her later in life for retirement.
And Rick in Arizona says, Hi, Clark. I've concluded that I'm just awful at staying on top of all the rewards the various credit card companies offer. I'm sure I'm missing out. So for me, I think I need a card that somehow automatically either pays me cash or applies the credit to the credit card balances. I am a high wage earner with high credit. I spend a lot each month on the cards and always pay them off in full every month. I'm thinking about the Amazon credit card where they use my points toward purchases every month. Easy peasy.
And that would be fine because it's simple. I love cashback cards. You do a lot of Amazon shopping as an Amazon Prime member. They give it, it's 5%.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great reward on Amazon.
They may limit you to a lower limit, though, than he needs. I find that I've heard from other people, too. Yeah.
So you could do the Amazon up to whatever this cap is. And you could also do a 2% cash back. The mileage cards, it's a complicated game. So much so that there's a website called points.me that's I think free for Amex cardholders, and others can either use a free version as a freemium product or use a paid one where they track the best use of all the points you've accumulated all different ways. So you think about how complicated the point stuff and mileage stuff has become, that people have seen an opportunity to have a website just to tell you how to use your points most efficiently for travel. Your idea of just going back to keeping it simple and earning cash, I love it.
And we have a cashback credit card.
We do have a cashback credit card section, because I love what's going on in that space with all the new competition over the cashback cards. The target you want is 2% cashback. There's the Robinhood one that's a very confusing way to get to 3%. And there's another credit union card we have that's 2.5%. But just doing an uncomplicated 2% cashback on everything you buy, I really love that. Fidelity Investments has that. Citibank does with the double cash. And now Wells Fargo has, I said it, I didn't choke. Wells Fargo has a 2% cashback card. So go look at our list and see that coupled with Amazon, if that works out just fine for you. And I hope you have a great day. Remember what we're dedicated to, you learning ways to save more, spend less, and avoid getting ripped off.